Four, three, two, one. Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I am the host of the Common Sense Show, and you already know that. And hopefully you already know that we're the show that's freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. We're really glad to be with you. With a lot going on, we keep going back to the well to Paul Preston. He is the president of the New California Movement. We're going to be talking to him about recent current events and developments, both with New California and the nation as a whole. But before we join Paul, I want to let everybody know that there's a couple of groups that make this show possible. The first group, Storable Food, preparewithdave.com is what we call them. And I have to tell you guys, if you don't have storable food, well, okay, ask the people in Houston how well they did and how quickly the shelves are cleaned out when Hurricane Harvey hit. Exactly. We're giving you 70% off. You can collect the food 2 and 4 week packets. That takes away the sting of having to do it all at once. No glyphosates, no GMOs, 25-year shelf life. Preparewithdave.com. Get the peace of mind that comes knowing that you have done what you need to do to help your family during a crisis. We're also brought to you by Noble Gold. Look, at you read Wall Street Journal, everything else. What are they telling you? Your pension's in trouble. Well, pensions need to be backed by something of value. Noble Gold's an expert at that. They're putting a lot of precious metals into it, and their returns have been fantastic. And I want to refer you to them because this is what I think you need to be doing, because it's what I've done. And I got the peace of mind knowing that more than likely my pension's going to survive because gold holds its value. Cash does not. Give the good people at Noble Gold a call for a no-obligation interview, question and answer session. Ask them anything they want. They're there to help you, and they intentionally do not pressure. Their number, 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347. Well, Paul Preston, president of the New California Movement. He's the host of Agenda 21 Radio, one of the most popular radio shows that are out there today. And he's turning CNN into a nightlight. And they're kicking ass and taking names, excuse the expression. I didn't think this movement would get this far in the beginning, and now I don't see how it's going to fail. Paul, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're with us.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, for having me on the show tonight.
Well, it's distinctly our pleasure. I have to tell you, Paul, the CalExit movement scared the hell out of me. Still does, because of the subversives that are still around connected to it. But I thought they were going to pull this off at one time, but they didn't. The New Jefferson Movement was co-opted. It failed. And then you're kind of like the last guy standing. Tell us where you stand right now with New California and what needs to happen to make this 51st state possibility a reality.
Well, you left out the Tim Draper three-state thing.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And of course, that's how much I take him seriously.
I know. Well, you know, it was interesting. He got himself actually on the ballot for the three-state initiative. And a extremist liberal environmentalist sued him to keep him off the ballot. And the guy won the lawsuit to keep him off the ballot. And the reason why he won the lawsuit is that Tim Draper's proposition was unconstitutional. It violated Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution, which is like, you know, kind of basic stuff. If you want to form a new state, you have to follow the Constitution.
You think?
Yeah. And you know, Dave, listen to this. The most extremist liberal court in the land, the California State Supreme Court, on a 6-0 decision, tossed the case. Tossed the case because it wasn't constitutional. It was just blatantly not constitutional.
Well, of course. And you are dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and you're kind of following the West Virginia model. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, and, you know, it's kind of ironic we talk about West Virginia, given what the state of West Virginia, or what Virginia is going through right now. But, we are a constitutional movement following Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution. And that part of the Constitution, which is the New States Clause, is the clause in the Constitution. It has only been used, what, 3 or 4 times before. Technically, there's an argument whether it's been used 4 or 5 times. That we're going to stick with the fact that it's only been used successfully 3 times, but every time a state split under this type of design has been proposed, it's always succeeded. And the state split clause gave us West Virginia, and the last time that happened, of course, was 1861. And what the Article 4, Section 3 basically states is that if you are wanting to form a new state, then what you have to do is you have to work with the state legislatures concerned, and then that with then that of the Congress. So we are following that design, and we are following the Constitution, and the basic formula is the Constitution, or the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, and we are, and then, of course, case law, which case law, of course, is West Virginia. So we're following all that, and we're successful. We're growing. We're getting bigger. There are 58 counties in California right now. We have 47 that have gone through our certification process to become actually declared counties within New California, but we have 5 provisionals, which brings us up to 52. Now, the provisionals will be on board here in the next couple of weeks, actually. They will be fulfilling their obligations by having a complete complement of people that need to be in their county committee. So 52 counties, basically, out of 58 counties will be on board with New California.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So are the Javier Becerras and the Kamala Harris, are they crapping their pants?
Well, you know, at this point, they have their panties in a bunch. I mean, Javier's got his panties in a bunch, and so does, Kamala Harris and the rest of the group. I call them the San Francisco treats. They are.
Oh, my God. These people are just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, to digress for a second, when they had the State of the Union address.
Right.
President Trump said something in the affirmative that everyone should agree with. I don't care what your political persuasion is. We're going to do what we need to do to stop child sex trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
And Kamala Harris was shaking her head no.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable.
I think maybe your audience has heard me say this before, but, you know, I have to declare that I was specifically trained in some very, very high-intensity trainings by the Los Angeles Police Department's Crimes Against Children's Task Force back in the 80s. And I have been carrying this with me. I've actually had to use some of the skills and techniques that they taught me to try and find, well, actually successfully find children that had been sex trafficked. In fact, just a couple of years ago in my local community here, I was pressed into service and we found a child. It took them 10 days. The child was missing for 10 days and we found the child in 4 hours.
Wow.
It's not rocket science, actually, if you know where to look and how to look. But my bigger point is that child sex trafficking is not a small crime. It's not a small business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. And to see Kamala Harris sit there and scoff and roll her eyes and do all of the shameful things that she was doing sitting there as a sitting senator from California almost made me want to vomit. I mean, that's just my life, and that's what I was seeing was somebody who was enabling all that by her status. But again, she's a San Francisco treat.
You know, and Pelosi's scowling, acting like a 10-year-old with her body language. And you got Ocasio-Cortez and her antics that she was up to. I don't know how anyone could look at these people and say, I'm really proud of my choice to be a Democrat. I don't get it.
Well, you know what's so mind-boggling, Dave, to me, and I guess it will always be, I mean, I understand, based upon my training, I get it. It's kind of like if you're learning how to drive, you know how to drive a truck or a car or an airplane, and those skills just kind of, or bicycle, those skills just kind of never go away. You'll always have them. But sure. You can still be in disbelief about the phenomena that you're riding a bicycle and you know how to balance and coordinate and all that. But I just shake my head at these people. Either they're incredibly ignorant or they're part of the problem. And I really have come to believe they're part of the problem. They know full well that what they do and how they're doing it involves such things as child sex trafficking, human trafficking, and all the evils, basically, that Donald Trump and everybody else is trying to clean up. They represent that group. They represent the cartels. They are their representatives. And, you know, how can you say, when you take a look at Nancy Pelosi as she was shuffling through the papers and rolling her eyes and all that good stuff, how can you say anything else but or come to that conclusion that she is doing nothing more than supporting the cartels, a worldwide criminal cartels and cabals that are destroying this country? And of course, look at what she's doing about this whole invasion of the southern border. This is the trafficking in human flesh and slavery wholesale, and she's a party to it. She supports it. What is wrong with the picture?
Paul, you know, I said this. It's so prophetic that you would say this at this point. I was speaking to Paul Martin, a good friend of mine from Colorado, revolutionradio.org, and I told him, I said, they have to be serving the cartels. I mean, actively working for them. Who would, in their right mind, be opposed to stopping child sex trafficking or drug trafficking or gun running? But they are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are. And then you flip the coin over. Who would be opposed to, let's just see who we're letting into the country? Good people? Yeah, we need workers here. Let's process the good people. Bad people? No, we're not letting you in. Who would be opposed to that?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, but what was pretty obvious is that we saw a lot of people last night opposed to just that. And, yeah. You know, the bottom line is that, as we've talked many times here on your show, and I talk about it every single day on my show, Agenda 21 Radio, that this invasion is an invasion. It's a real, true invasion of our country. We are at war. There are people, there are elements of the deep state, the deep actors that are well coordinating all these activities. You know, you just don't hustle up 2,000 people to come to the border and meet at a certain point. Logistically, this, you just don't make this happen spontaneously. It's not like spontaneous generation or a spontaneous fire. These people are well organized, coming from the places that they're coming to meet up in different places in the middle of Mexico to get onto buses and be transported to Tijuana or to McAllen, Texas. I mean,
yes.
This is a logistical thing that has been well worked out, well coordinated, and clearly the Mexican government is on board with this. And you know, I'm sure you've been down to Mexico many times. I have too. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to a certain place and they pull you over and you got to pay them $100 and you drive on. I mean, that's just the way it works. So, what about $1 million to move 1,000 or 2,000 people and put them on those buses and get them up north? As you know, Dave, that's just nothing to these cartels, and I'm sure that that's what happens. It's going on now. But this is a planned strategy, a Cloward and Piven strategy to overwhelm us with civilians and citizens that have children with them to overrun us at the border. And Trump knows this. He absolutely knows this. And so does Nancy Pelosi, because she's part of it. Her goal is to buy time so more and more and more and more people can come across the border. That's what her strategy is.
I'm flabbergasted that more people can't see through this. To me, the intent is clear. And I guess this heightens my frustration with President Trump, only from the standpoint that there are deep state operatives connected to these activities that are vulnerable in other areas, legally speaking. And I just still saying, when, President Trump, when are you going to go after him?
Well, I think he's actually going after him. And I think that people need to start watching and paying attention about some of the things that are going on. I really think that Nancy Pelosi has been served notice. I think there's some things around her and around her ilk, if you will, that I think we're starting to see a race to the finish here. Who's got what on who? And whether or not Nancy Pelosi will survive or Donald Trump, well, my money's clearly on Donald Trump. And there's a lot of things just that are happening, I think, behind the scenes that people don't quite see yet. But the evidence is the tertiary evidence is actually pretty clear as far as I'm concerned, because you can see their desperation. I think last night was a real good sign of complete desperation on the on the Democrats' part. You have Ocasio-Cortez and some of these other younger Democrats that are putting a lot of pressure on the old crew out there, you know, Pelosi and Schumer, and they're uncomfortable with that. Let's just face it. They are uncomfortable with Ocasio-Cortez. Now, that means she's, I'll be in a strange sort of way, she's playing for us. I think it's just kind of humorous if you think about it. Because she's just absolutely driving Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them crazy. And I say, go for it, girlfriend. Go for it. Keep it up. And she is. She's not stopping. She's not turning. So, you know, the question is she for Donald Trump or not? Just being facetious there. But the socialist thing is really bothering them a lot. And, you know, even Bernie Sanders, of course, he's on top of the whole Ocasio-Cortez business. But within the fight within the Democratic Party, there's a dismantlement going on. And I think you're going to see the punching bag effect, that Nancy Pelosi is basically becoming a punching bag for the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And last night, I think, was a clear demonstration of that. Trump has set her up, and she doesn't even know that she's falling.
It's interesting. I think she does know. And I'll tell you why. Look at her body language. Just go look at any of the clips with the State of the Union. I mean, she sees Trump as the destroyer. I mean, she was staring a hole through him.
Mm-hmm.
This is personal. This wasn't, I'm acting like I'm in opposition to these Republican policies. It's personal for her. So I think she does know. And I wonder where Ocasio-Cortez fits into this. First of all, she's such a dumbass. She didn't even realize what branch of government she was elected to.
I know.
And then she couldn't figure out why she hadn't been paid before the inauguration. And then on top of that, she knows nothing. So, I mean, is she just a stooge? I mean, she can't have the awareness, I don't think, that she knows what the forces are that are at work.
Well, and you know, Dave, I'm just telling you, I think she's the best weapon Donald Trump has right now.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. I mean, look at how crazy it is. She has just absolutely divided the Democratic Party. You know, divide and conquer, which is one of their techniques. Now the technique's mm-hmm. being used against them in their own world, and that has got to be really disheartening to them. And especially the other part of it, too, is who are these freshman Democrats that are all dressed up in white last night doing standing ovations for the comments that Donald Trump's making?
I thought they were the Klan. I was waiting to see the burning cross break out.
Where were the hoods?
There were some memes running around the net after the speech that were showing that. And I just, okay. Were they really Democrats?
I don't know.
Okay, exactly.
That's just it. This group of people is really not Democrats or socialists. And, of course, the theme that came out from Donald Trump last night was that they were socialists, and he was calling them out. That's exactly what was going on. He was calling out the Democrats and warning them that socialism was going to die, and, you know, it's not going to happen. However, of course, in California, we are a socialist state. There's no question about it. There's absolutely no question we're socialist. And I think that the efforts of New California, as you know, we had a constitutional convention on the 26th of January. And in that constitutional convention, we resolved with our own assembly and Senate, our own governmental system, we resolved three resolutions demanding that the president declare California in a state of insurrection, because they're in violation of the three basic elements of Article 4, Section 4, the guarantee clause, which means that the federal government, by way of Donald Trump, has to guarantee all American citizens who live in California a Republican form of government, mm-hmm. and they have to keep us free from invasion, and also they have to keep us free from domestic violence. And all those are being violated, and we wrote three pages for each one of the resolutions, the whereas and what fors. And we sent that off to Donald Trump, and he did get a chance to read it, and we did get a response from the president. And his response was, push on New California. That was his quote to us. He did not make it directly to us, but the intermediaries did. They're very, very clear about that. And it was very, very clear that in the speech that was given last night, the socialist discussion is one that we have had absolutely for weeks now, almost well over a year, mm-hmm. Every Tuesday when we register our grievances. So a lot of what came out in the president's speech last night was reflective of our document that we sent to him, and we're just ecstatic about that, because we have to stop socialism in this country. We have to. I mean, unless we want to go on and, you know, have everybody rounding up the usual suspects and that sort of thing, end up like communist China.
Have you seen some of the messages coming out of Venezuela where they're telling the world, we used to have productive economy, we had a society that worked until we embraced socialism? Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. I've been following Venezuela tightly. We still have some of our resources down there that we've had them for years actually talking to us, and they went silent about 6 months ago. These are American expats, and we have not heard from them, and we're very, very concerned for their safety. But, yes, we've been following this very intensely, and California is right there. California is the new Venezuela in 3 years.
Interesting you'd say it that way. I wonder how far you carry the parallel, though, and here's what I mean by this, Paul. In Venezuela, you've got Chinese, Cubans, Russians, and right next door, you got the Colombians and the Americans. Are we going to see that kind of melting pot of potential conflicts in California as well, involving the same kinds of groups?
Absolutely. They're here.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
No, they are here. We've known this, that they are here. And, you know, their problem that they have here is that there's one major difference in California as opposed to Venezuela. In Venezuela, you have a standing army, and that standing army, and you've got divisions within the army. And, of course, one of the things that Maduro did was very, very smart on his part. He made everybody a general. So, therefore, they're all, beholding to him. And so he's got control over the military to a degree. But there's the fracturing that's going on within the military because of the socialist policies and so on. And, you know, soldiers need to eat, too. So what we have is a situation where he still is in charge of the military. In California, that is not the case. The case in California, Jerry Brown does not have control of the military, Gavin Newsom now. But the people in charge, they don't have that military part of it. They don't have the sheriffs. They don't have the highway patrol serves as the state troopers in California. We used to have what's called the state police, but back when they decided to pull in power and consolidate all power in a central location, they got rid of the state police, but then they turned that over to the highway patrol. They don't have the sheriffs. They don't have the highway patrol. They certainly don't have local policing agencies around the state of California, especially in light of Ronel Singh and, of course, the Butte-Natalie Corona, just that whole thing at Davis, California. That whole thing has fallen completely apart for the leftists in California. There's what's known as the California military. Now, this is kind of interesting. We have a National Guard. We have a militia, and we can have a militia. But we also have what's called the California military, Dave. And the California military, which is an offshoot of the it's kind of like a group of people who play between the National Guard and the normal armed forces, the federal government. And we're doing an investigation on this, actually, about the so-called, quote, California military. Because it seems to be an offshoot of a military organization that's able, are you ready for this? It's able to make treaties with other nations.
No. Yeah, I thought that was illegal.
Not in California with the California military. Isn't that interesting? Now, we're investigating.
There's a law, and it's jumping out of my head now, but
can't do that.
It prevents states from negotiating with foreign powers.
Well, it prevents states from having standing armies. We don't have standing armies. We have the National Guard, but we don't have we don't have the California military. I mean, I don't know where this group fits in, but it's a big group. And they've actually been in other countries negotiating policies. Isn't that interesting? And there's more on that.
But how do they get away with it? That is unconstitutional.
Well, you know, they actually, remember the Georgian situation? There was this armed, you know, when Soviet Union or the Russia invaded Georgia. You know what troops were there? The California military.
Really?
Yeah, in Georgia. Now, why? Why does that? But let me get on to the other issue, though, the bigger
one. That's very revealing.
I know, and I'm planting a seed for you, Dave.
Okay, all right. I'll be quiet and let it grow.
No. You're just going to sit in the, just like a mushroom, sit in the corner to watch it grow.
Yeah.
But I know you. You're going to watch that thing. You're going to get into it. But my and so are we. We're definitely looking at why does the California quote military group end up in Georgia, and why does it make agreements with places like the Ukraine? Treaties, Dave. Treaties. So that, and of course, everybody's sitting wondering, going, "Wow!" And of course, I mentioned the Ukraine. Did I mention the Ukraine and all that business? Okay, just Ukraine and John Brennan, the usual suspects in Ukraine.
Nazis.
Right, Nazis. Those guys.
So you're saying California is connected to the Nazis?
No, I'm saying that the California military is making agreements with Nazi-esque groups in the Ukraine.
Yes, that's my point.
Okay. Well, anyway, you have yours, I have mine. Okay. Perspective. But anyway, so the Jerry Brown, but the leftists in California don't have the support of the policing agencies. And they really don't have the support of the military. But what they do have is the support, though, of all these OTMs and gangsters that have been coming across the border. Now, OTMs are other than Mexican.
Right.
Such as Hezbollah and Hamas and ISIS and so on that have been flooding across the border in California and using the potential to be used of secret weapons stores in California to overthrow the government. Now, that is a real possibility.
I'll be darned. I have to go do some research on this to satisfy myself.
I bet.
I can't think of the governmental prohibition, but there's a term
right
that prevents states from negotiating with foreign governments. But I also know you're right because I published a picture on my website. It was about the CalExit movement, and they set up an embassy in Moscow.
In Moscow, right.
So I know you're right.
Right.
I just don't know how they're getting away with it legally.
Well, I think they're pushing envelopes that just aren't there, and it's clearly what's happening. And this is our argument in New California, is they violated Article 6, Section 2 of the Constitution, which is the Supremacy Clause. They've exceeded their legal authority in terms of state law and exceeded federal law. That's a violation of that Article 6, Section 2, the Supremacy Clause, which means that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So if they are negotiating outside the bounds of the U.S. Constitution, and by the way, the only person who can do treaties is the president. He's the only one who can sign treaties with the consent of the Senate. Well, where's all that going on? See, that's not happening. That was not what was happening. And we know of documents that actually exist with those signatures on them. Documents exist.
I'm dumbfounded. I mean, it knocked me over with a feather on this. Okay, so California is its quasi-owned country.
Well, they're trying to make it that way, right?
I think you're going to like this. You're going to like this. I have a former associate, very, very close. And this former associate has family members in real estate and second generation removed. They have helped Jerry Brown purchase a home in Belize where they have no extradition.
Yeah, agreement. I was going to say extradition, yeah.
I thought you'd like to hear that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. And I know that he's got some sort of Buddhist thing going on right now. His property in Calusa, we get reports about that, with a lot of young boys participating.
So he's joined the Pelosi Club of protecting the pedophiles.
Well, you know, Jerry Brown has a history, of course, in West Hollywood. So with Adam Schiff. In fact, it's what's his name? Did I say Schiff?
You did. I thought you were getting ready to cuss on my show. I've done enough of that tonight. But anyway,
you know what the president calls Adam Schiff. He calls him Adam. I can't say the word. That's what he calls. He just doesn't go with the Schiff thing. the president. Yeah. Ed Buck. Remember Ed Buck?
Mm-hmm.
He's a buckaroo. Ed Buck is out of West Hollywood, and he's a money bundler for Hillary Rodham Clinton, and he also likes gay black men, young men in particular, and he likes to introduce them to methamphetamine.
And the younger, the better.
The younger, the better. And it just so happens that just recently a body turned up in his house, a man. It was a man.
That's right. Yes, 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 yes.
Looked very
one
young.
One of the infamous donors that had dead bodies in his house. I remember
two.
That.
He's on dos. On the.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dos bodies. And anyway, so the first one happened in 2017, a very young man, about 19 or 20 years of age, who Ed Buck, at the age of 15, introduced him to methamphetamine. Now, Ed Buck has a particular sexual predilection to watching young black men get turned on with methamphetamine by injection. It has to be by injection.
This is bizarre.
No. Listen, I can get really tawdry. I'm not going to do that. But anyway, that's his sort of thing. And then this guy's body showed up in his house, and of course the LAPD and Sheriff's Department said, "Oh, it's no big deal. It's just Ed Buck, and you know he's a friend of Hillary Clinton, and of course very good close friend to Adam Schiff, and also Jerry Brown. They're best friends." And Hillary Clinton, there's pictures of them together, you know. And so he hangs around with Adam Schiff. And it's interesting about Adam Schiff in that he likes that community out of West Hollywood. And, of course, his congressional district is right there in Pasadena, Burbank, which is right there next to West Hollywood. So you can see how accessible he has to Mr. Buck and his friends. Now, I'm not saying that Adam Schiff, you know, partakes of what the same thing that Ed Buck does sexually, but it's pretty clear to what we understand is that there's some sort of relationship that Ed Buck and Adam Schiff have had. Now, your audience and my audience can take that any way they want to.
I know how I took it. I took it about as literally as you said it. And you know, no wonder. California, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but the parents are up in arms there because the government is trying to force the LGBTQ sex curriculum onto first graders.
And you have a problem with that?
Do I have a problem with it?
I mean,
do I have a problem with a six-year-old learning about sexual identities? Yeah, I have a problem with it.
How many do we have in California? 19 or 20 sexual identities now?
Mm-hmm.
No more chromosome count for you.
Yeah, whatever happened to XY and XX? I mean, it's just, what do we got? We're up to 300 genders now is what I'm hearing.
Is that what it is? Oh, I'm
that's
sorry.
What I hear, yeah. That's what an undergrad told me that. And I said, what would those chromosomes be? I know XY and XX. I know there's mutations like XYY, you know,
right.
Called supermale syndrome, yeah, XXY, Klinefelter's.
Right.
But those are still predominantly XYXX.
And by the way, for those of your audience out here, don't quite. I'm a geneticist, so I kind of get this, you know, understand it completely. But the XX, there are normal males have an XY chromosome count. There's 46 chromosomes, 23 chromosomes. Two of those chromosomes are sex chromosomes that determine your sex determination. So when your mom and dad exchange sperm and egg and they come together, you have an X and you have a Y if you're a male, and you have an XX if you're a female. And sometimes that kind of gets a little screwed up. So sometimes you can have people that are XXY and XX. Mm-hmm. X and XXY, so you have different and they it comes to a situation oftentimes Klinefelter's or Turner syndrome where these people in terms of their gender is just as mixed up, and I'm talking about the physical aspect of their genitalia just as mixed up as you know you could possibly imagine. So there actually has to have some sex change operations that are conducted. These have been well known. They are to keep the child alive at the time when they are conducted, and usually they're done at birth. So there is no, and of course the gay community, the LGBTQ people have extrapolated that to mean that people can just all of a sudden turn into male and female overnight because they think they are. And, of course, that's usually an environmental thing. It has nothing to do with their genetics. You have perfectly healthy XY individuals thinking they're XX, and they're really not, and XX thinking they're XY, and vice versa. So there's a lot of gender confusion that's been foisted upon people by way of the environment. In other words, by publicity, media, and extremists such as the LGBTQ community. Now, having said all that, there's reasons for sexual orientation or sexual operations to, you know, correct various genetic features, and that's a fact, but not to what we're seeing today, and not all these various, there's only XX and XY, and like I tell people, I said, you know, if you want to really confuse me, find somebody who can tease out, if you're a male, all the Y chromosomes and insert new X chromosomes in all of the cells of your body. I mean, that is just not happening. It's not about to happen. And of course, there again is the pseudoscience that surrounds all this hocus pocus, if you will, in terms of chromosome count. And the, how many genders did you say? 3,000?
300 is what I
forgot. 300? I mean, you know, yeah. Five or six.
I mean, it would make going to parties interesting these days.
Well, it'd look like Star Wars bar scene.
No, worse. I think far worse than that.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
I shake my head at the time we live in. But see, Paul, there's a bigger issue here. You can get caught in the minutiae of, is it 300 genders and are waiting for tic-tac-toe XXX to show up? I mean, you can get at all kinds of nonsense. The bottom line is, this: they don't care about science. It's about overturning the culture.
Right. Destroying it. Exactly.
Yeah. That's the whole agenda. And this is why they don't care about science. I mean, we're seeing, this is incredible to me. I mean, there's not a month goes by that I don't read about a tenured professor that's fired because they say there's two genders.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing is to disrupt and destroy our culture. That's really what this is all about.
Absolutely incredible that we're not calling this out as a nation.
Well, and, you know, I'm hopeful. Now, we're starting to see signs of it, actually, in the new California movement, where there's a real pushback in California against the Republican Party of the state of California, the state Republican Party of California. And I've never seen what I'm seeing. Of course, we're involved with the new California movement, so we're kind of extracted from that. We're not part of that. But we have a lot of people that have just literally parachuted right out of the airplane of the California Republican Party, because the California Republican Party, in my opinion, is completely worthless. And in fact, it's nothing more than an operational arm of the Democratic Party and the globalists. They have California Republicans have not won really any significant election since 1996. And it's not going to get any better. We just have a monoparty communist system. But I'm seeing people really finally just fed up and wanting to do something and take charge. And that's where we see it in New California. We're seeing people really in California. Finally, the conservatives of California have realized that. And again, there's been a very, very sophisticated methodology to suppress people's opinions and news and information that they get here in California. So this has been a deliberate, by-design activity, and now all of a sudden, though, people have said enough is enough, and so they're calling us like crazy. We're the only outlet for people now in California, is the new California outlet, and we're all like-minded with them. We're even Democrats, Dave. The one of the places I get the most phone calls from about what's going on is San Francisco County.
You think there'd be no confusion? Sorry, bad pun, but I mean, accurate.
No, totally. But you know, they know, these people I'm hearing from, they know there's something really, really wrong. Well, you know, and of course, there is something really wrong. And now, of course, they have options, and Donald Trump is giving them some of those options, and that's why last night's State of the Union speech was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it was instructive and it was directive, I think. And I think it was instructive in the fact that, you know, making, I'd say it's a unification and unification attempt. I think he did unify the country a lot more than the Democrats would like to think. And I think he was very, very instructive in the sense that we are not going to become a socialist nation. That's a fact. We are not going to become a socialist nation.
At least until 2020.
No, it's not going to happen. He's going to do whatever he can between now and then, and that includes New California. We know, based upon the language that we heard last night from the president, that he is going to take action to put a stop to this, and it will happen before 2020. Absolutely, it's going to happen. We know that there's a time frame. You know, we've been in touch with our sources, and we're very, very comfortable with what we're really overwhelmed. A lot of the stuff that he was saying about immigration, illegal immigration, and of course, socialism is just exactly the same things that we've been putting out in our grievances for the last 54 weeks.
What's the next step for Trump?
He's going to consolidate his power. He's going to finish up this negotiation. He's going to get his wall. And Nancy Pelosi, he's going to get it one way or another. He has options to get the wall. And as you know, he's got still money in the pipeline to continue building large portions of the wall. It's a matter of time before he gets all the money he wants. He can declare a national emergency, or he can start to bring military assets to the border. And, of course, they're going to need requirements down there, and building a wall could be part of that requirement. There's different ways to finesse the wall, and I think he's going to get his wall. No doubt he's going to get his wall. And Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are going to become continually marginalized. As last night was the marginalization of the Democratic Party. He did a great job. I mean, like I was telling people last night, I said, it's showtime. Donald Trump is in stride now. Donald Trump, you know, he's the apprentice guy out there. He knows the media. He knows what's going on. He knows the game. And he called it out last night. And now everybody has to play his game. It's wonderful. And Nancy Pelosi she was beyond herself. And all the Democrats, they just didn't see anything coming. At least they could have, what they could have done is read his speech beforehand and realized some of the stuff that he was playing up to with the camera, you know, was going to happen. But they didn't do that.
I can't remember the show, one of the late night talk shows. And I don't watch the garbage. But we got in late last night from a game. And I turned on the TV, and this one guy, I don't know who he was because I don't watch these shows, but he went on for 30 minutes about the State of the Union, and he would say, well, Trump said this, and he'd go off on it, and there was nothing intelligible.
Right.
Paul, I was trying to make sense out of his argument. Okay, what is it that this guy is upset about? And I couldn't even get anything out of it other than, let's make fun of his hair, his nose. Let's do some voice inflection imitations. But there was nothing of substance, and they used 30 minutes of network time.
Right.
Yeah. It just mind boggles me that the concentrated effort there is to discredit Trump, and they're getting to the point where they just say anything. And see, here's what they didn't learn. And there's something I noticed in the Republican primary. When you had 16 candidates and everybody in the mainstream media ganging up on Trump, the American people got behind him at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because I think Americans hate bullies, and they saw the collusion that was going on, and the Democrats have already crossed that line. They're not winning over the people.
No. No, they're not. And that's why I said, when I saw Nancy Pelosi doing what she was doing, which was so childlike, you know, Trump was winning the argument right there. And you knew, everybody had a feeling Nancy Pelosi was going to do some sort of stunt, and she did. You know, all my listeners and people that I had contact with were telling me they were expecting that Nancy Pelosi was going to pull some sort of stunt, and she did. And it was childlike. You know, she's 80-some years old, and she was acting like a little baby girl. I know. I mean, I said at one point in time, I think it was this morning's show, maybe I said it yesterday, just expect her to start sucking her thumb. Could you see the visual?
Yeah, I did. I saw her, it was right. Continual facial expressions. The body language says, I'm six and I'm not getting my way.
That's right. Yeah, 7 years.
That's what I saw. And I'm thinking, my gosh, you're a giveaway here. I mean, when you don't agree with someone and you want to appear to be professional, and I think that Speaker of the House, you should have some kind of decorum about you, but you would sit there and be stoic and you would applaud the obvious things and ignore the things you disagree with. And that's your statement.
Right.
But that's not what she did. She played the child card.
She did. And that's a loser.
I'll tell you, I wrote an article and I get your reaction to this. I said, Kamala Harris is playing the stupid card to get elected. Mm-hmm. And I went through the stupid thing she's talked about. No private health care, no private ownership of cars. I forget her tax rate. I get the Democrats' numbers confused, but say 70% for the sake of argument. And I'm saying this is pure stupidity. People aren't even going to work if you're taxed at that level. And then I went on and made the point. I said she could win because 50% of America is dumber than a box of rocks. And a lot of them want something for nothing. They want their participation trophy. They don't want to have to do anything. What do you think about that statement?
I think it's true. I agree with it. But, you know, you got to remember that who Kamala Harris is. Maybe your audience doesn't understand. Willie Brown. She had an affair with Willie Brown when Willie was married. Of course, the wife didn't know anything about it. But
they
Kamala
pay to play was only the Clinton Foundation.
No, it works out here in San Francisco. So Kamala Harris followed the same pathway to success by going like what Jerry Brown did. Mm-hmm. With Willie Brown's help, she became the prosecutor of San Francisco and then kind of, you know, humped her way all the way up into Sacramento as the attorney general, following in the footsteps of Jerry Brown. And of course, now the interesting thing that a lot of people don't understand, Jerry Brown, he was elected governor in 76 to 84, two terms. And then in 1990, we had term limits that were brought in saying, oh, we've got this legislature that's out of control, and the guy who's controlling all the legislative pieces and stuff, we need to get rid of him, and his name is Willie Brown. Now, in the meantime, in this proposition, I think it was Prop 14 or 144 or something like that, we're going to say term limits, that you can only be limited to X number of years as an assembly member and X number of years. You have to be limited. You can't live there forever like Willie Brown is. But if you're governor, you want to be governor, well, we're going to limit you to two terms, and that applies to anybody after November 1990. And there you go. There you have it. Well, the only person that applied to after 1990 was Jerry Brown. So he was eligible right there for another two terms to be governor in 1990. And it was Slick Willie that was pushed out of term limits. And, of course, he was banging Kamala Harris at the time.
Mm.
And so, you know, that was his – and then he goes on and becomes the governor or the mayor of San Francisco. So it's a very incestuous thing. But here's the caveat to all this. Jerry Brown becomes elected in 2004 to be the Attorney General of California. And he's the Attorney General in California. And he's absolutely wreaking havoc on the law enforcement capability of California through the Attorney General's office, right? And especially the Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement with the DOJ. And so lo and behold, who runs to replace him, because he's running for governor, who runs to replace him? Kamala Harris. So Kamala Harris wins, and she gets sworn in January of 2011, and Jerry Brown becomes the governor again. Lo and behold, you know, the Constitution prohibited him from becoming governor except for that proposition that was run in 1990. So he returns for a third and fourth term. Well, the very first thing he does, he and Kamala Harris join forces, and they get together to destroy it within the Department of Justice, one of the finest, by the way, the Department of Justice has been around a long time, but they've also had within them one of the finest law enforcement agencies in the nation, known as the California Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement. So what do? They sign legislation to do away with them. They starve them out, and they force 400 agents in California who had been trained specifically to fight the cartels, to prevent marijuana grows and so on, they get thrown out. And there's an open door for the cartels to grow marijuana in California. And boy, did they do it. And then you tie that in with, of course, the whole notion of legalizing recreational pot. Well, these cartels get billions of dollars. California's largest cash crop for export has been marijuana for the last 5 or 6 years, primarily because Kamala Harris and Jerry Brown did away with that Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement. That's Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I know. It's a wonderful web they have over there in the Democratic Party. Paul, we're just about out of time, and we're going to continue to track the progress of New California. Let's hope as your dream becomes more of a reality that President Trump also goes on parallel tracks and puts some of these people in prison. Anyway, I have to say that every time I talk to you. But anyway, tell the people how they can follow your good work.
Well, the every day from Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Pacific time on Red State Talk Radio with Agenda 21 Radio, and that's a21r.com. a21r.com is the website. And, of course, we talk a lot about New California on the same show. So newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com is the website to get our information about what's going on with the 51st state in the United States called New California.
Sounds good. And, Paul, I tell you, it's amazing what you've accomplished, and you and your people are to be congratulated. And let's hope things move along, because we need to negate those people in Sacramento. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Common Sense Show.
Thank you, Dave.